Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about working, starting with discussing some of the ADA requirements of employers of people with visual impairments. Our focus topic will be about life at work, both for Pete and for an interviewee. And then we'll be describing a really cool headset that you can use with both your telephone and your screen reader in the office. It works great. But first, we would like to welcome some new stations that have picked up Viewpoints. We're really excited. The first station, besides our local Reach Out Radio here in Rochester, New York, that picked us up was a nationwide Canadian reading service. Second was Maine Airs, that originates in Brewer, Maine, but broadcasts statewide. And most recently, WJCT's radio reading service in Jacksonville. Welcome to everybody in Florida. And the Radio Talking Books service in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to you, too. Now to our tip of the week. This week's tip is get yourself a network of helpers for drills and emergency situations, and make sure everybody you work with knows who these helpers are and kind of what the pecking order is for who's looking out for the blind person.
So when I was at Xerox, they were always very good about that. And within the group, we always had a person assigned to take me out and to come to my office and grab me in the event of a fire drill or an actual fire or some kind of other emergency. We often had a backup person also, just in case the first person got distracted or was off from work or just was at a meeting or something like that. So every time there was a drill, you know, the fire alarms would go off and people would evacuate the building. And within a couple of seconds, one of these people would come to my door and say, "Okay, Pete, it's time to go." Actually, it's interesting, you know, although I have pretty good mobility and I know my way around work, with all the noise of the bells and alarms going off in the hallways, I found that very disorienting and it was a little bit more difficult to navigate. So this turned out to be a good thing.
And of course, that worked for every fire drill and every other evacuation drill we had, and they wanted us all to be prepared, so we had lots and lots of drills. And then one day there was a real emergency and Dale had retired and Roger wasn't in that day, and most of the rest of the group had been laid off.
Right, the building was pretty empty. There weren't too many people working in my neck of the building at that time. But fortunately, someone from down the hall knew me and knew I walked around with a cane. I didn't know him very well. I knew his name. He probably, you know, knew me by sight. We had talked maybe once or twice, but he came and grabbed me. And so it's nice to know that people are looking out for you, even if it's not their official job.
And we're still grateful to Sam for doing that. It turns out since we've all retired, we've become personal friends with Sam, totally independent of this incident. But the fact that he knew that the blind guy might be on his own and might need help and came down the hall and knocked on Pete's door and said, "Look, they want us all to go to this special place. I'm going to help you get there." We're still very grateful to Sam. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act requirements for employers of people with visual impairments. It turns out that the ADA, or Americans with Disability Act, just celebrated its 20th anniversary in July of 2011. It was passed, it obviously went into effect July of 1991. They have their own official website, www.ada.gov, where they describe the act as, "The ADA gives civil rights protections to individuals with disabilities similar to those provided to individuals on the basis of race, color, sex, national origin, age, and religion. It guarantees equal opportunity for individuals with disabilities in a large list of situations, so public accommodations, employment, transportation, state and local government services, and telecommunications. Fair, swift, and effective enforcement of this landmark civil rights legislation is a high priority of the federal government. So if you want more information about the ADA, you can go to their website, www.ada.gov, or you can call the Department of Justice ADA information line at 1-800-514-0301. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission actually enforces the employment provisions of the ADA, and they have a very long section on their website describing all of the details of what kind of accommodations employers need to make for the visually impaired. So that is at www.eeoc.gov for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, /facts/blindness.html.
You know, fortunately, there's a lot more awareness about ADA and making workplaces accessible for folks with handicaps these days. But that doesn't mean that you always need to resort to, you know, telling your employer about the ADA and going through this whole routine. A lot of companies are very good about it. Even when I hired in with Xerox in the late 70s and early 80s, they were very good about providing me with all the access equipment I needed to do my job. That worked out very well. Also, I found that, you know, although it's tempting to think that your employer might provide the solutions and the access means that you need, they're often not aware about specific disabilities and what ways they can handle that most effectively. So often it's a lot better if you can come up with the ideas, propose several different ideas to whoever might be responsible for acquiring your access equipment or access software or whatever might help you do your job. And if you propose some solutions to them, give them some alternatives, they will have a better idea of how to help you out and to help the team and the company in general.
Well, this is especially relevant to people with vision problems because odds are your boss isn't aware of what kind of tools are available, but you're probably a lot more aware than they are. And so if you can do the research and say, hey, you know, there's this new gadget, either my vision has changed and so I need something different, or something new has been invented that I could make better use of, you know, they love it. And in general, you know, as both an employee and as a boss, I found that bosses are a whole lot happier if the employee shows up with a solution than if the employee shows up with a problem.
And that doesn't apply just to access and disability rights and things like that, but almost anything that you're doing. I mean, to make your work more effective, if you can make your manager's job easier, you'll be a more effective employee.
So just to tell you a little bit more of what's on the EEOC site, one of the things that I was pleasantly surprised to learn is that when you request an accommodation, you don't need to use any magic words. It doesn't even need to be you who does the asking. It can be a friend or a family member or anybody else who's representing your interests. And you can just, in plain language, ask for whatever kind of reasonable assistance that you need. You know, we've seen cashiers at the Goodwill ABVI store who clearly have vision impairments. You'd think, well, how can they run a cash register? But they have something there that recognizes the money. And with that device, they're then able to handle the transactions all by themselves. And so whatever it is, you know, if you need a screen reader or you need a CCTV or you need a human to come in and read to you, or a driver, or, you know,
it might even involve special training to do your job in a more effective or a different way.
In fact, one of the things you kept running into, Pete, was some of the internal websites weren't accessible, and that was a problem. And, you know, so you'd get your administrative assistant to come in and help you with any of these sensitive websites, unless you could get them to rewrite the website.
Right. A lot of the personnel things were not accessible to me, and I needed to access that. And, you know, I just found someone else to help me out with those things.
So you'll be pleased to know at the bottom of the document, because they are paying attention to the visually impaired, it says that this document is available in the following alternate formats for people with disabilities: Braille, large print, audio cassette and electronic file. So they're paying attention. They're trying to do the right thing to help the visually impaired actually be able to function in the workplace and in the rest of daily life.
You are listening to Viewpoints. Viewpoint.
So this week's focus topic is life at work. Well, in order to wind up at work, the first thing you need to do is get yourself a job. So
that's a good idea.
And before you do that, you need to think about what kind of job you want. And saying you want to be, you know, head of the United Nations is a nice thought, but if you don't have the qualifications or experiences, you might want to think of something a little bit more practical.
So when thinking about a new job, it's probably a good idea to think about the skills that you have and what kinds of things you enjoy. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for enjoying your job. There are so many people who just dislike their job, and then it becomes a real chore to go in at 8 in the morning and leave at 5 in the afternoon. And, you know, if you can find a job that you enjoy, I always felt that at Xerox, as a scientist, you know, I tell people I played mathematical games and puzzles as a kid, and then they paid me to do that for a living. Well, that isn't so bad. So if you can find something that's fun, that's the first thing. Then find something you can do. I mean, I might think football is fun, but I don't think I'd be an ideal quarterback in the NFL or some professional team. But there are many jobs that, even as a visually impaired person, you might not at first think you'd be able to do. I mean, some people might not think it's possible to be a computer programmer. Well, these days, with the tools and speech synthesizers and other access tools that are available, that's quite an easy job for someone who's technically inclined to do. And I think often, you know, education and a lot of training will help you get some jobs that are more appropriate for the kinds of things you can do. I mean, for example, I think I'd find it a lot harder to pack shelves on a supermarket, but being in some kind of call station or working a computer is quite easy for visually impaired folks these days, and some of the more technically oriented jobs tend to be easier to do because of the access equipment that's available. And so I think, you know, if you have more of an education and more skills, it opens up a lot of doors for you in terms of possibilities.
And we've known blind lawyers, blind professors. I had a blind economics professor when I was undergraduate, but there was also a blind electrical engineering professor at my school. And he would assign to the students to, you know, design and build and debug a circuit that does whatever. And the students would do their thing, and then of course it wouldn't work, and the professor would say, okay, describe to me exactly what you put together, describe to me what the trace on the oscilloscope looks like. It was actually a much better learning experience for the students because the professor couldn't just walk over and say, oh, I see what's wrong. The students actually had to get more involved in describing what the issues were.
So speaking of your skills and experience, I think when you're looking for a job, employers are most interested in what kind of skills and experience you bring to the particular job for which you're interviewing. For example, when I applied for jobs out of graduate school, I never mentioned on my resume that I was blind or had some visual problem. I just mentioned really what my technical credentials were, my experience, the kinds of research I had done and things like that. And often, when I'd get a call saying, you know, we'd like to interview you, we'd talk about my experience, what I could do for the company, et cetera. And then they'd say, okay, why don't you fly out here to do an interview? And how will I recognize you in the airport, they'd say. And I'd say, I'm the guy with the white cane. And then all of a sudden it was, what do you mean? And that's the first time the blindness came up. Unless the blindness is relevant to the job, like driving a truck. But, you know, for computer things or technical things, it wasn't really relevant. So it never really came up until I met the people in person.
Well, there were some almost humorous stories, you know, once Pete got to Xerox about how they attempted to accommodate his visual impairment.
Well, in fact, we talked a little bit about that in the overview section about it's best if the suggestions come from you about how people can best accommodate for your disability. So, for instance, I arrived at Xerox, and they knew I was blind by that point. And my first day at work, I walked into the office, and there was this $4,000 very fancy computer screen that made print in color and a little bit larger, but it wasn't large enough for me to read. This was a color monitor, and I didn't want to stick my nose so close to the screen at the time. So they found someone else to give it to, and then eventually I ordered the equipment that was appropriate for my particular visual problems at the time.
And then a few years later, this was before the days when everybody had a personal computer on their desk. Pete got a little bit tired of having to do remote computing at the computer center, and he asked for his own computer that he could have in his office and run by himself. Well, now his boss was a little bit sensitive to, you know, not saying anything about Pete being blind to him. So he cornered me and said, "You think Pete can handle having his own computer?" And I'm like, I didn't know what to say. I said, "Well, hey, every time he moves, he takes apart and reassembles his stereo. How much harder can it be?" And so the boss bought Pete his very first mini computer, and he was pretty successful with it.
That was interesting. I didn't hear that story until a couple of years later. I didn't know what had transpired at the time. But it was a pretty, you know, I can imagine him being skeptical. It was a pretty substantial investment at the time. These mini computers were running about $40,000 or $50,000, and they didn't want to make a big mistake. So, but it worked out well.
So besides Pete's experiences, you may remember we talked to Ross McGregor last week about being a musician and being a music producer. Well, we also talked to him about running the business end of his music production business. And here's a little bit more of Ross talking about the business end.
Where you had your studio, were you actually running that as a small business yourself, or did you have a business partner?
No, I was running it myself, but I had had like an assistant engineer, and his or her job was to help just assist on recording sessions, and but also help on the in the office part of it. It was like a combined secretarial assistant engineer position, and they would use the computer in the office because back in those days, you know, I couldn't use computer at all because I didn't really touch computers myself till about 2001, 2002.
Uh-huh.
I didn't lay a hand on them till then. So the assistant, you know, would do the office work on the computer, and then we got a computer in the studio in the 90s, and we had Cubase on that, but because I didn't use it at all, but my assistant would do all the computer work for me.
You had your assistant sending out bills and doing payroll and all the business work, or were you able to do that somehow?
No, I didn't do that, no. That was all done by the assistant. Back in those days, I had a Eureka. Did you ever come across a Eureka?
I never heard of a Eureka.
A little laptop computer made in Australia.
Uh-huh.
In mid-1980s, and it had a Perkins Braille keyboard and a little funny little voice. And I used that just for my own personal, like managing sessions and like keeping song lists and track lists and keeping track of the finances and that kind of thing. So I used that just for my internal use, so to speak. But then the assistant would do the actual office computer work, yeah.
And then you had the assistant set up the calendar and manage all of that?
Oh, no, I would do the calendar on my little computer. I would take all the bookings there and I would handle those. I'd handle the actual management side of it in that way in terms of managing sessions and booking musicians and booking, you know, studio time and that sort of stuff. And I would handle that part of it, yeah, on the Eureka.
So even in the mid-70s, you had some sort of computer or electronic help that you were able to manage?
I didn't get the Eureka till late 80s.
So how did you run a business in the 70s? I mean, computer access was pretty limited at that point. And you said you didn't use it at all.
No, I just used the Perkins Braille. I did everything on the Perkins, keeping Braille notes of things and records of things. And
wow, that must have been really cumbersome.
It was. That's why I suppose I say, and to your previous question, when I think today how things are compared to back then, you know, I think things are so much better for us now with all this technology. Those days, we did it tough back in those days, Nancy.
I bet. Running a small business now with a visual impairment with all the computer accessibility tools would be, I mean, maybe not totally seamless, but certainly feasible. But back in the 70s where you didn't have access to any of that and you had to do everything in Braille, I could imagine that would have been cumbersome.
It was, yeah, very. But back in those days, I mean, I was very determined. You know, I really wanted to make the studio work. And so I suppose when you're determined, you just find, you know, solutions to problems, or you just push on, I suppose.
And here are some final thoughts from Ross.
I think we're, as blind people these days, we've got a lot to be grateful for, you know, with all this technology, things, the access to things we can get these days. And like, it's far better than when I think back, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah, just we can get onto the web and access a lot of information there. And now using this, you know, computer music stuff, it's getting really to a good level now. But there's still a lot of, obviously a lot of progress to be made. But I suppose I just compare it back to my earlier days, and I think how things were then and how they are now. Like even just running a business, you know, just using email and internet and that sort of stuff. And the fact that we've got access pretty much to all that, you know, as well, I think there's a lot of good things there. But doesn't mean to say that there's not still more to be done.
You know, what Ross's story and experience really point out there is that where there's a will, there's a way. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And you can see that even in the early 80s and late 80s, when the technology wasn't so advanced, he just found other ways of accomplishing the tasks that today are a little bit easier. It may have been a little bit more work, and he had to be a little bit more creative about how to solve his problems, but there's usually a way to do things.
Now for this week's high-tech item. Using a headset that works with both the telephone and the computer simultaneously if necessary, which can be especially helpful in an open office setting. If you have a private office, which Pete did for a while, running a screen reader isn't a big deal. You listen to it and everything's fine. But if you're in one of these open office settings, which have become more and more popular, everybody else doesn't want to hear the thing, so you need to run it with a headset, and then the phone rings.
That can be tricky. So actually, my last little bit at Xerox, I had occasion to work in an open office, and this became an issue that, you know, how was I going to do the phone and listen to JAWS and not bother other people? And I did quite a bit of research to figure out what kind of solutions might be around, because I wasn't familiar with these things at the time. And it turns out there aren't a lot. We're going to focus on the Plantronics headsets. They make a whole range of these devices these days. I'm sure there are other companies that do similar things, but we're most familiar with this.
And you can get to them at www.plantronics.com. That's spelled Plantronics, Plantronics. And they've got technical support where you can call them at 1-888-752-6876. And there's also a distributor for them called Headsets Direct. And you can get to them at the web at www.headsetsdirect.com or 1-888-244-0483.
And once you've done a little bit of your research on the web or at one of the places like Plantronics or the Headsets Direct outfit, I would advise you calling them up, because it's a little confusing from the web to understand what are the exact capabilities of each of these headsets and what they do. So it'd be good to confirm before you spend the money on buying one of these headsets.
So we actually took an audio clip from the Headsets Direct site where they demonstrate some of these headsets, and they're really pretty spiffy.
Hi, I'd like to introduce you to the Plantronics WO100 Savvy Wireless Headset. This is a headset that's really made for the business environment and has some great uses that will make you much more productive and unify your communication. First off, I've got it configured here with the over-the-ear piece. It's a noise-canceling microphone, so that will cut down on background noise around you, making your calls come across more crisp and clear to your users. It has an ear gel that goes in your ear, so that makes it where you can hear very comfortably. It has a 9-hour talk time on the battery, so that will get you through the busiest of your days. Also, it will give you 350 feet of distance, so you can cover a lot of ground while you're continuing your conversations. Now, the biggest thing that this headset provides is you can use one headset to talk on your telephone, and you can use the exact same headset to talk through your computer. So where that really comes in handy in the business environment, if you have a landline and you have a call that comes in on your regular telephone, and you're also using like Skype or Microsoft Office Communicator or Avaya or any other soft phone voice over IP applications, you simply push a button on the base unit or headset, you can do either one, and you can now make a call through your computer. And by pushing the buttons again on the base unit or headset, you can actually bridge all those two platforms together. So you can have a call on your telephone, you can have a call on your soft phone computer, bridge the two together so you have all the calls in the same place. This side where it charges is a very clever setup with Plantronics, because if you down the road decide you want a different style headset, you simply buy that headset and a charging cradle and you'll push it down on there. And you can replace it with any other headset down the road. That also allows you to conference in three additional headsets. So this is the first time you can have four people all on one conference call through your landline or through your soft phone application and simply tie them all to the same base unit. On the side here, or on the back, let me show you that first, are all your cables that come in that connect to your USB power. If you need the handset lifter, that's also on here, or busy light, and then the connection to your handset. On the side are your basic settings. You have a microphone volume you can adjust, your compatibility switch settings, and then your speaker volumes. So very small, very lightweight. You won't even know it's on your desk. Very clean lines with the Savvy 100 here. Again, this is the Plantronics WO100 Savvy wireless headset for your office. If you have questions on this or any other products, please give us a call at 1-888-244-0483 or visit us online at www.headsetsdirect.com. Thanks.
Now, in that particular description, as you can tell, they're not focused on people using screen readers and phones simultaneously. They're mostly talking about people using ordinary landline phones along with some software computer-based phone like Skype or Microsoft Communicator. But obviously, the same thing would work with a screen reader, and that's how a visually impaired person might use one of these headsets.
And the added benefit that he just happened to mention in passing is that you can connect a total of four people with their own headsets to the same telephone. I can't tell you how many meetings I sat in where there was somebody in another building or state or country or whatever, and we'd have the speakerphone in the middle of the table, and so they could more or less hear us, and we could more or less hear them, and the fidelity was miserable. But if you can have four people with their own headsets connected to the same telephone, then it's like everybody's directly on the phone with each other at the same time, and you're getting much better fidelity.
That's a nice feature.
That would be really nice.
So I found this very easy to use JAWS while I was talking to someone on the phone, and I could either let them hear JAWS or not, or you know, keep it away from them. So it was very flexible.
That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about novel software that's being developed for computer, web, and photography accessibility. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.